Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since the colour bronze, and you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week I welcome back mental health practitioner Nicola Knoll, founder of Brainworks Therapy, who shares expert insights on overcoming trauma, building resilience and rewiring the brain to thrive in a world that often stacks the odds against women. We'll be talking about International Women's Day. Nicola, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How have you been?
You know, it's fine. It's always busy, busy. We were talking about this before. And I know you're always busy. But it's good to be busy, isn't it?
It's good to be busy. And I can't believe it's March already. It's like, where is the year going?
It's mad because you go into January and it's cold, it's dark and all the rest of it. And you feel like it's lasting forever. And then you get to March and it's like, oh, we're in March and the days are getting a bit longer. It's brilliant stuff.
It is. Like, you go to bed, it's January for, like I say, 97 weeks, and then you blink your eyes and you're like, March.
It's brilliant. I'm just glad the days are a bit longer, do you know what I mean? And it's starting to get somewhat a little bit warmer.
Yes. Last week, I'm going to put it out there to the British public or whoever's listening, that may be our summer.
It was lovely weather last weekend, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Nicola, reminders. I know you've done loads, but it's always good to have a reminder about your background.
So I am Nicola Knoll, for anybody who doesn't know me or hasn't listened to one of our recordings. And I am a specialist psychiatric nurse, hypnotherapist, solution-focused hypnotherapist, transformational coach and speaker. And I work with women to help change their mindsets, rewire their thought patterns, help them manage their emotions and build confidence and resilience, to help them go on to lead a life that they really, truly cherish and really want. I have worked with everybody from the UN on prison reform to the HRH Duchy of Cornwall on menopause awareness. And my expertise go from perinatal psychiatry all the way to forensic, which is judicial and custodial mental health.
Yeah, vast background in mental health, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nicola, you've spent over 2 decades in mental health, working with women from all walks of life. What are the most common struggles you see affecting women's mental health today?
With women, I find it's battling an exhausting cocktail of overwhelm, self-doubt, never-ending expectations, anxiety, burnout, imposter syndrome, and the emotional overload of juggling millions of responsibilities. They're just through the roof. Many women are stuck in survival mode and they're constantly giving, rarely replenishing themselves, filling up their own cup. And then you add in a bit of past trauma, a dash of societal pressures and hormonal changes into the mix. And it's the perfect storm. So it's no wonder many women out there are running on empty.
You mentioned imposter syndrome. It's a very interesting syndrome. I've done a little bit of reading in the past about it. I've spoken to women in the past also that felt that they had it. Can you talk to us a bit about that? Because it's something that I don't think there's enough awareness around it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So imposter syndrome, in a nutshell, I'm really simplifying it now. It might sound like I'm being quite dismissive, but I'm not, is essentially having low confidence and self-worth, but translating that then into what you do. So essentially you run in a business or you're hosting a radio show, and then you keep saying, I'm not good enough, I don't have the skills, I'm shying away from presenting with all the knowledge, your whole skill set that you have, your whole uniqueness, because you have a lack of confidence and self-worth.
I've spoken to people where they've been doing whatever they've been doing for years, career-wise and all the rest of it, and all of a sudden they experience imposter syndrome. Even though they've got years of experience in doing whatever they're doing,
yeah,
it's almost like they think, oh, hold on a second, I do this. This is what I do. And they're really acknowledging it, and they're thinking, gosh, I can't believe I do this. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's the most strangest thing that any happen. It doesn't happen to everybody. It does happen, though. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And you'll find the people who experience imposter syndrome are normally the most experienced, yeah, and dare I say, best at what they do.
That's right.
In their field.
I was actually going to say exactly the same thing. It's usually people that are really, really good at it, and then all of a sudden, I don't know what it is, maybe the reflection in the mind, I don't know, time goes by, and all of a sudden you have a bit of a shock, and age may play a part as well. You know, as we get older, we can become more anxious about things and all the rest of it. I mean, I don't know for sure, but all of a sudden people experience imposter syndrome. They can't believe what they do and how they do it, and then at that point, it's almost like they've got to kind of refresh themselves about, you know, their own skill set, you know?
Yes. And we do a lot of things that we take for granted. So for example, if I spoke to somebody about my normal working day in a prison, they would be horrified. But yeah, I was like, well, isn't that normal? And it's like, it's not normal. It's not, you know, how many people, I mean, there were a few, but the vast majority of people don't go into work, pick up a radio, a set of keys, for sure, and then within 5 minutes before they've even put their bag down, can potentially be cutting somebody down from hanging. Then 20 minutes later, going and sitting in handover. Then 20 minutes after that, dressing somebody's, you know, sore on the leg. The most people would have the first incident and then have to be recovering from that, not just start running into things upon things upon things. Or the skill set that you learn from that. But I take that as every day, or every day given as the being able to assess, being able to see risk, where that's not a lot of people's reality.
Yeah, absolutely. And that sounds like a lot of, I mean, that's a lot of mental well-being pressure. Do you know what I mean? To go through that. And don't get me wrong, I know some people, they've got like a thicker skin for certain things. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, and some people develop themselves. I've watched documentaries, especially around the police.
Yes. How
they speak about their initial, you might actually know this anyway, to be honest with you, you might have spoken to police people about it, but they speak about their initial first few years in the career and what they saw, and how during that period they had to kind of develop themselves psychology-wise and help with maybe talking to about things with their colleagues as well. And they built more resilience around it, around what they do. And then they obviously go on to do, you know, whatever they need to do. But the first few years is a lot to do with building resilience.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm honest, I don't know if we build resilience as much as push a trauma down because of the environment that you work in and for how you, like, don't want to be viewed. Because in any speciality, whether it be working in prison, whether it be working in emergency service, whatever you're doing, you're only really supposed to ever do that for 5 years at a time. So when you see people who've got like 20, 30, 40 years. Know that they're coming with trauma. Because when we look at mental health services, the carers aren't being cared for. That's just the top and bottom of it. And we're only now starting to develop the talking side for the people who advocate for the talking for them. So we're only really starting to get any sort of psychological services or mental wellbeing services for people in the industry right kind of now.
From your experience, how do societal pressures like juggling careers, motherhood and relationships contribute to stress, anxiety and burnout in women?
We've been sold the lie, haven't we? And it's, you can have it all without breaking into a sweat. And in reality, that's not how it goes. When we look at the pressures on women, you know, don't be too fat, don't be too thin, don't wear too much makeup, don't wear any makeup at all. Why aren't you working a full-time job and managing the kids? Not poo-pooing men, but where's that expectation on the man to have a job and look after the kids, but then not a good enough dad because he's not there? So many women are spinning plates at a dizzying speed, expected to be high achievers at work, then present nurturing at home, then somehow squeezing self-care, like, you know, drink 2 litres of water, make sure they have a facial, get in the bath. You know, self-care, like, it's a cute little side project when actually self-care needs to be front and centre of what we all do. So we all fill up our cups. So we're giving the rest of us, not the best of us. So the result is chronic stress, exhaustion, and the constant nagging feeling that we're never doing good enough, and the pressure to be everything to everyone. And women are burning out, and it needs to stop.
How do the ladies you usually work with, how do they manage it, obviously with your help as well?
Mm-hmm. In reality, it's putting self-care first. But what you'll find is most women who are on the verge of burnout, who are struggling, have a lack of a couple of things. Boundaries. They definitely have no self-care. And because they've got no boundaries, no self-care, they're normally people pleasers. And there's normally in the background, there's some program of trauma that is, you know, self-confident, that lack of self-confidence, not being good enough. And therefore, when you ask them to put self-care front and centre, they feel they're not deserving of it. And they feel that there's better things to be doing. But then how they value themselves ripples out, and that's how people treat them.
Do you feel that, unfortunately, some of those ladies have low self-esteem as well?
100%. 100%. Low self-esteem, not thinking they're good enough, they're not deserved enough, that if they just do this one extra thing, it will validate them more from people outside. It will make people like them better.
It's quite sad, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good. Good,
Nicola, International Women's Day is all about breaking barriers. What are some of the biggest mental and emotional barriers holding women back, and how can they start to overcome them?
Fear of failure, perfectionism, self-doubt. These barriers don't just slow women down, they keep them stuck in cycles of hesitation. Many of us have been conditioned to believe that we need to wait until we're ready or we're qualified enough before we go out and after what we want. And that time never comes. That time never comes. So the key is to break free, take imperfect action, be imperfectly perfect, and start changing those narratives, start rewiring them, the ones that say that you're not good enough. Confidence isn't something you wake up with, it's something that's built. And so, like I say to a lot of my clients, and when I'm doing keynote talks, it's not about, you know, people look at people like Ronaldo, Michael Jordan, and they call them talented. They're not talented. They spent hours, days, months, years honing their skill.
For a lot of hard work, a lot of hard work.
Yeah. So it's about knocking that needle every day. And that's what has to happen in order for you to start building that confidence, for you to start rewiring your brain, for you to start building those new neural pathways, where that becomes your everyday, that becomes your living reality.
Mm, absolutely, absolutely. Many professional women you work with struggle with imposter syndrome. How does this mindset affect their confidence, and how can they start rewiring the brain for success? Now, I know we covered this a little bit earlier. If we can go into a little bit more detail about rewiring the brain for success, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah. So imposter syndrome is the mind's way of convincing you that you're a fraud, even like when you've got those receipts. So if you think about it, it's like when you go to, say, Asda, other companies are available, and you walk out, you know, you've got the electronic tag on the steak or whatever, and it beeps, and you're like, oh my God, is the security guard going to stop me? And it's like, but why are you worrying when you've got the receipt in the bag to show that you've actually bought that item? So it keeps women shrinking, doubting, overcompensating. And the fix is to recognise that imposter syndrome isn't the truth. It's just a habit of thought. So you start rewiring by challenging those thoughts. Is this fact or is it fear? You know, shifting your focus from proving yourself to owning your expertise, and stop downplaying your wins. However, as you know, as women, we've all been told, oh, don't show off or don't do that. So you do that. But when we get into the rewiring of the brain itself, it's about habit. So the brain likes to feel safe, the brain likes habitual stuff. Initially, when you start doing stuff that's not habitual, it's like, oh, we don't like this. But what you're doing is you're building stronger and more fibrous neural pathways to the behaviour that you want. And then what starts happening is something called synaptic pruning. So the behaviour that we don't want starts to fall away the more we do the behaviour that we do want. So if we think of a ski slope, and a ski slope's got two sides, at the bottom of a ski slope, one side of it is a really good bar, and then the other side of the ski slope is like a really bad bar. To get to the really bad bar, it's really easy, isn't it? Like it's a smooth, well-trodden path, you get there really quick. So we can call it the low road. And then to get to the really good bar, there's loads of rocks, there's loads of trees, the path isn't as well-trodden. That's the high road. So that's to your intellectual brain, where you make all the very best decisions and you're very rational. So to put any habit in place, or say like any movement, anything you want to train to the brain, on average, it's about 1,000 times you have to do that before it becomes a habit. So imagine you have to get to the goodbye, you have to duck and dive, weave and bob, you know, tread in that path nearly 1,000 times to be able to get there and for it to become that habit. Whereas to go down to the what we call primitive brain, where all the bad habits live, where you can't be innovative, where you can't come up with new decisions, new plans, it's really easy because it's well-trodden, so it's really quick. So what you're doing is you're essentially reprogramming the mind, but you have to keep doing it. You have to keep knocking the needle. It's not a one and done.
It's almost like, it sounds like there's a lot of self-talk going on. But every single time one of the ladies or men or anyone basically gets that negative thought, oh, you can't do that. You shouldn't be that. You haven't got the skill to do that. You're almost saying to yourself, actually, I've been doing this for years and I can do this. And there's this, and this. It's almost like and you're right, it is reprogramming. You already have been doing it. It's just telling yourself, I've already been doing this and these are my skills and like this is how I do it.
Yes.
That's why I find imposter syndrome the most strangest thing, because it can happen to people where they've been doing something for years and all of a sudden the brain says, well, actually, you can't do that and you're not that confident in doing that and you haven't got the skill to do that and blah, 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 blah. And you're thinking, hold on a second, I've been doing this for years. Why do I feel so unconfident about something I've been doing for years and I'm really good at it? It's the most weirdest thing on the planet. I don't know whether it's like a reset button, and I'm like I mentioned it earlier on, like a refresher you've got to go through. I have no idea. The brain is a strange thing.
The brain's a very complex thing. It's a very complex machine, but you have to think about it as if we think about it as machine, like malware's got in there somehow. So, you know, like when you know, if you haven't got your security program up to date, you're going to get little bugs and stuff in there that's literally going to mess up your computer. And so you can have a really high function, brilliant computer, but something can happen, just a little chink. And if it happens, that it's at a gate that's not being guarded, that you're not standing guard at the gate, then it's in. And once it's in, you have to think, it spreads like wildfire. So the things that we do, so these chinks happen normally when we're not taking care of ourselves. We would say that we're at our lowest, where we're overwhelmed, where our bucket's so full. And why does that happen? That happens because we're not doing the things to take care of ourselves. So our immunity is low, our distress tolerance is low. And then, so we could be tickety-boo, we could be fine, we could have been the confidence of confidence, and then all of a sudden something happens because our bucket's full, it's got nowhere to go, and it's converted into anxiety, into stress, into a thought that we can't do it, and then off it goes.
Mm, yeah, that's a really pretty way of putting it, absolutely. You specialise in trauma and PTSD. Can you shed some light on how past trauma impacts women's ability to thrive and what solutions brainwave therapy offers to heal them?
So we would like to think that trauma just lives in the past, but it doesn't. It shows up in the present. It affects confidence, relationships, decision-making, even physical health. And so women who have experienced trauma often feel stuck in flight or fight mode, and are constantly on the edge of being emotionally numb. And so at Brainworks Therapy, I help women to rewire the brain. And so when I say rewire, because a lot of people are like, what is rewiring? Essentially, it's about changing your thought pattern. It's about taking an old program out and putting a new program in, one that's up to date, has got the best, you know, antivirus and malware, like, is putting the stuff in to make sure that you're okay. And so through a blend of neuroscience, hypnotherapy, and solution-focused coaching, they can finally break free from survival mode and start stepping into thriving, feeling more empowered, whatever an empowered life looks like for them.
Absolutely. Perimenopause and menopause are often overlooked in mental health conversations. How does this life stage affect women's emotional well-being, and what can they do to manage the mental health challenges it brings?
So menopause itself isn't really just about hot flushes. I know, you know, when they talk about it, people just be like, oh, it's hot flushes, and that's kind of
it. I've done a few shows on menopause, and there's loads of other symptoms, and it's awful. What you ladies go through is awful. It's a real nightmare.
I mean, when we look at, for the ages of 41 to 55, in that age range, it's the highest, has the highest rate of female suicide. Why is that? Why is that? Suddenly we get to 40 and we decide we don't want to be here anymore. It's honestly, it's awesome. So much. Mm-hmm. And it's about identity shifting, it's confidence wobbles, your brain fog. It's so, so difficult. I'm in my 40s now, managing caseloads in prisons of very highly dangerous men. In fact, even some of the UK's most notorious criminals and murderers I've managed. And when you can't even remember your own name, you start becoming very scared, because you are managing risk and complex risk of some of the most dangerous people in the UK, and you can't even figure out what you're doing next. So the hormonal changes can trigger anxiety, depression, mood swings that just knock even the most resilient woman sideways. And the key is education, is talking about it, is self-compassion, and having a toolkit of strategies. So whether that is HRT, and it's not always for everybody, whether that's lifestyle changes or mindset shifts, but you're not losing it. Your brain is just recalibrating, and with the right support, you can thrive through it. However, with all that said, it is knowing that that's what's happening, because normally, because it's a drip, drip, drip kind of thing, and it just seeps in over time, you literally feel like you're going mad. So it's noticing it, and it's other people being aware and educated as well, because you never see something when you're in it. So it's about somebody else maybe coming up to you and saying, do you think maybe it could be the start of this?
With menopause also, I think, if memory serves right, bones become more brittle. Is that correct? You can break your bones, basically.
Yeah, so you can get osteoporosis, and that's, so with women, what it's been, it's about the vitamins, but also about, when I say exercise, I mean lifting, and not getting a 2.5 pound dumbbell and lifting that. I mean going to the gym and safely lifting weights. So if that's, if you need to get, you know, a PT, or you need to get somebody to help you, because when you do that, that protects your bones, your heart health, your mental health. That one thing is like a miracle cure, and you need it.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're just going to go to another quick ad break, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Good, good.
The station that makes you feel good.
So Nicola, you talk a lot about rewiring the brain. Can you explain what that means and how it helps women build resilience and emotional strength?
So when we talk about rewiring the brain, it's not just about old patterns that keep you stuck from forming new neural pathways that work in your favour. Our brains are adaptable. So that's thanks to a little thing called neuroplasticity. So let me just explain neuroplasticity because I'm throwing around.
Yeah, I've no idea. I've lost an interview. I don't know what's going on.
So neuroplasticity, we have to think about it as our brain's ability to find, to store, and to use information. So if we think of neuroplasticity as a bookshelf, and a bookshelf, and it's got boxes on them. And in those boxes, there are files. When you, your brain, when you have neuroplasticity, we all have it to a larger or smaller degree. But when you're on fire and you're working, you can come over to the shelf and you can find the correct colour box. You can go into the box. You can find the correct file. It tells you what you need. You can put the file back in, put the lid in the box. That's it. You go off and you use what you need to use. When it's not a function as well, the neuroplasticity isn't there as well, you'll find that you'll go to the shelf, there's no box on the shelf, they're on the floor, or the files are outside of the box and everything's just all over the floor. So our brains are adaptable, which means you're never stuck in being anxious or overwhelmed or being reactive if we're looking at the right bookshelf with everything where it should be. So with the right tools like solution-focused therapy, the right techniques, the right mindset and transformational coaching, you can shift from survival mode into a place of confidence, calm, clarity. It's science, it's not wishful thinking. So the more we do things like meditation, like self-care, having that, and I don't say mindfulness, you have to be careful because mindfulness sounds very wishy-washy and very, I'm just going to have a nice walk. But when you're intentional about what you're doing with your mind, whether you're having that 5 minutes in the morning to breathe and input and, you know, doing affirmations or journaling, doing your gratitude, when you're being intentional about that, you're increasing your brain's neuroplasticity.
Right. Yeah, it's a really interesting subject. I'm just trying to engage and to take it all in. We know self-care is important, but many women struggle to prioritise it. What practical mindset shifts do you recommend for women who feel guilty about putting themselves first?
First thing first, definitely self-care is not selfish. So stop telling yourself that. Although I can say stop telling yourself that, it's easy for me to say that. But self-care is not selfish. You wouldn't let your phone run down to 1% battery without charging it. So why would you do it to yourself? And why do you think that that's acceptable? One of the most profound things that I've heard that's been said to me, because coaches have coaches, you know, therapists have therapists. And my coach said to me, think of the level and the standard of care that you expect for others, that you give to others. And I was like, yeah, got it. And then he was like, now can I ask you, do you expect the same for yourself? And then I was like, oh my God, I have been so mean, so cruel to myself, because the level and the standard of care that I give to people are up there. So why am I not expecting the same? So the biggest mindset shift is realizing that taking care of yourself isn't a luxury. It's not even just about it being a necessity. It's the standard that should be there. If you don't prioritize yourself, who will? So start small. Start setting those boundaries. Start saying no without over-explaining. And treat the rest like an essential appointment. A burnt-out woman serves nobody. So like I often say to my clients, bosses don't cancel appointments with themselves. So if you've got that time that's squared out to go to the gym, guess what you need to be doing? Going to that gym. If you've had that time to go out for a walk, then guess where you need to be? Having that walk. You need to be treating yourself as the priority, as important.
Absolutely. As a global mental health advocate, you've worked with the UN, HRH, Duchy of Cornwall, and international networks. How do cultural and systematic factors shape women's mental health across different parts of the world?
Big one, isn't it? That's a big one.
I know, I was looking at the question, I was like, oh gosh, that's quite a big question. I was just trying to make sure I get it right in saying it.
So, on the surface, mental health struggles are universal. However, it's the way they're experienced, isn't it? And we all experience it in different ways. And never mind intersectionality, because that's a whole, you know, radio interview in itself. And the support that's available widely varies. So whether it's postcode lottery, you know, or whether it's their rural living and they don't have it, it just varies. And in some cultures, women face stigma for even admitting they're having mental health struggles. In others, the burden of unpaid labour, the gender-based violence that happens, or the economic inequality creates additional mental health challenges. So I'll say something really interesting. I was discussing with you earlier on that this year I'm a UN participant for the Commission of the State of Women 69. When we look at the gender pay gap, on average, a white woman, a woman not of colour, will work 2 months free for the year. A woman of colour will work on average 4 months free for the year because of the pay gap. So that just shows you how severely, currently still, women are underpaid.
Gosh, I didn't know that at all. Quite shocking, really.
Really shocking. And so when we take that and we look at what effects that will have on mental health, because that affects everything, doesn't it? It affects your access to healthcare services. It affects, you know, how you're able to live. It's definitely not, it's not equitable, is it? So it creates additional mental health challenges. So systematic change is crucial, but it's so that it's equipping women with the tools to advocate for themselves, to be able to seek support, to be able to challenge harmful norms, to change and start conversations, but it needs to lead with action. But it also needs to be male allyship, because A man will listen to a man. It's just simple. A man on whole won't just listen to a woman. And so there needs to be male allyship within what happens to be able to create that change. Because unfortunately, at the moment, we're not where we want to be. We're not where we should be. So for a girl born today, she'll probably be 100 before, in Parliament, the seats are close to equal, so 40-odd% of women versus men. 100. A girl born today. So we're not where we need to be, but unfortunately, and I'm not going to make this political, but everybody listening will know, where we are in the world today with certain countries and certain countries' opinions on DEI, on opinions on gender and the rights, we are losing the status quo and slipping back really quickly. So male allyship is a biggie.
Absolutely. Nicholas, thanks for coming on the show today, as always. Where can people find you if they want to have more of a discussion, use your services and that kind of thing?
So they can find me at Brainworks Therapy on Facebook, at Brainworks Therapy on Instagram, or Nicola Noel on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. And thanks for coming on the show again.
Thank you.
And thanks, you listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.